Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Women Emerging podcast. I'm Julie Middleton, Director of Women Emerging. Every week I speak with women around the world of different ages and in different sectors about how they lead, because we need many more women leading in the world today. We explore how women lead differently and do it their way, which is authentic, fulfilling, and highly effective. Our bravest and our boldest work comes when we feel we belong. That's what Rebecca said to me. And we had this wonderful conversation going backwards and forwards. It sort of brought up all kinds of memories and thoughts with both of us. It was just fun playing with it. Yes, so bravest and boldest work comes when you belong. Here goes. Rebecca, when you talk about leading, you use the word belonging a lot. Why is that a trigger word? Why is that such an important word for you?
That is such an interesting observation. I think it's like a fundamental curiosity of my life. I was born and brought up in a bicultural, biracial family in the United States, have since immigrated and spent time living in India and in South Africa, and for the last 8 years here in Nairobi, Kenya. And so I think it's something that I think a lot about because it hasn't always come easily to me, not only just as a leader, but as a human, I think. But it's something that when I feel and in my own life, and when I observe that people feel in their own lives, just as human beings and then also as leaders, it seems that it just enables, I think, like us to do our bravest, boldest living and work.
So let's get practical. If people have a sense of belonging, they need a common mission.
I'm not sure if having a common mission is actually an essential part of connective tissue. It's a very effective one, but I think having some sort of common ground is a really important ingredient. And maybe that comes in the workplace from a shared mission, having a common goal.
What does common ground mean?
Something shared, something collective. I think, I don't know, Julia, in my own life, I do think people yearn to be part of something bigger than themselves. I think if our lives were just, at least in my own life, even when I look at myself today, when I wake up and I'm only thinking about my little life and my needs and my feel at all, it just like, it's really small. And I think we all yearn to be part of something that like connected to something that's bigger than us. And that can look a lot of different ways. So I just think as a leader, finding that and cultivating that across lines of difference is some of the most fun, interesting work. I think belonging is not the same thing as fitting in. I think it's like the antithesis, like fitting in actually, like, I don't know. I've done that in different times in my life, and I actually feel like quite far from myself. And when I don't feel like I can belong to myself, it becomes impossible to feel a sense of belonging with other people. And when I'm trying to fit in or be cool or gain acceptance in that way by changing who I am or shape-shifting who I am to be like someone else or like other people in a group, that actually feels super isolating and alienating. But when I'm courageous enough to just be myself, and when I'm curious, leaning in with curiosity to know the dreams, hopes, desires, preferences, quirks of my teammates or other people who I'm with, whether they're my neighbors or fellow church members or people on my team, when I lean, I think curiosity is also something that's really important.
It's interesting you also use the word be seen. I don't know if you know, but one of the people on the first expedition was Anna, who's a a violinist, and she composed a beautiful piece of music which she called Elle est visible, she is visible. And almost the opposite of belonging is to be invisible, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's also, I think so. And I think there are days where I would love to be invisible, and I actually feel like shrinking some days. And I think of my work too, and I think of other people's work. I don't know if we, I think we have seasons of this. But then when I think about when I know that no matter if I fly or if I flop, that I have friends and people who love me regardless, that's like that then enables me to be like, okay, let me take this risk. Like, let me show up a little bit because I know I'll be seen, maybe not by everybody, but by some people. And I think that makes all the difference.
So, if you want to help your team to belong, what are the practical things that you need to do?
Okay, one, reinforce, co-create that common ground, whether that's a mission, vision, a shared cultural structures that help bring joy or connection. I think having that common ground, a shared mission vision, I think is huge. Then co-creating rituals or systems, like some of this is really can be really fun, like shared lunches or things. Some of it is not sexy, like, oh, this is how we just systematize some of our values. This is how we ritualize some of the things that we find important. This is how we do conflict here. This is how we do, I don't know, everything from like this is how we do, these are some of our HR systems. This is how we request time off. This is how we, I'm like, I do think like these unsexy things tell us a lot about culture, common ground. And so I would just look after those things.
Just explain the word ritual.
An action or system that's done with intention and with purpose, I think, is a ritual. So that could be weekly shout outs. That could be how you start a Monday team meeting. That could be an assembly at school, like anything can be
How
a
would you
ritual.
start? How would you start a Monday team meeting?
Oh, at our team, we do highlight and a low light from the week. Just a quick little check-in. And they're kind of, and it's safe because they're time, it's just quick high low. And I think as a leader, again, you get to set the stage. So how vulnerable you share, I've noticed is like the extent to which other people can bring themselves. I was not as an executive director there to use my team as like my therapist, right? But I would come and say, there's conflict in a friendship that's close to me and that's feeling super challenging right now. That's my low light. My highlight is I went on a 30K run. Like there are opportunities we have to like, again, to show curiosity and courage and vulnerability and authenticity. And I think the more that we can do that in spaces to which we hope to foster belonging, the better success we'll have. And it doesn't mean it has to spill over. I'm not trying to spill over my work life with all my friendships. But I have seen that being honest and real then allows other people to do that and feel like, oh, I am seen here. And that matters. I'm seen, I'm safe, I can be my whole self. And I'm here to do great work.
Lovely. So rituals and systems, don't underestimate how important the systems are. Co-create the systems and no doubt keep them always under review because they can't become sort of ossified, can they?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think that also, like, belonging is a dynamic experience. So it's not static, and neither should our rituals or systems that support that belonging. They shouldn't be the same. They shouldn't be stagnant. Also, people come and go. The world around us changes, and the things that a given individual or community might need to feel seen, that changes both. I think, yeah, it changes because of things that we bring, but also things that we're affected by.
Give me other examples. This is fantastic. This is really practical. So what else do you do when you're leading to build that belonging?
So I often have to check myself of like, how am I supporting someone's growth? But also, how am I just letting them become the person, the leader that they're meant to be, even if my vision for that is so different from their own? Like, really loving and supporting them means accepting them for who they are and supporting them on their growth trajectory. I think that when we try to coerce or control people to be a certain way, that actually is the antithesis to belonging and to someone's own growth. So for me, being trying to be back in that posture of humility and curiosity and acceptance for others is a super important habit for fostering like a collective identity or belonging.
When you're leading a team with masses of different cultures and backgrounds, what are the secrets there?
My sense thus far is to like l l lean in. I mean, this is very countercultural, but lean into celebrating those differences. As uncomfortable as it might seem, just lean into celebrating that, because I actually think that is what can create cohesion in the ways that it matters most. And so, yes, reinforce the things that we share sacred together. And again, in a work context, that could be a goal, a mission, a shared vision for the world we want to live in. Reinforce that as kind of the superstructure, and in all the ways that make sense, help people feel seen and celebrated in their differences. But I think the moment that we as countries, as nations, as communities, as institutions try to make everyone be the same, is actually when it gets dangerous, number one, and I think it feels stifling sometimes against my very nature to do that. So that's where systems again come in handy, systems that help us lean into this desire to celebrate difference. Then can help us on a day-to-day basis, actually live that way.
If those are the things that you do, what are the things that you absolutely should never do?
Demand that everybody be like you. And that sounds so obvious, but also not hiring people that are exactly like you, is probably a really good thing. Be really wary of surrounding yourself by only people who look like, think like, talk like you. I think that's gotten individuals into really sticky situations. I think, again, on a macro level, it's gotten our world into really sticky
Becky, give me
situations.
an example of when it's all gone wrong.
So many times. When I have been so desperate for people to, I don't know, for a sense of team and camaraderie, that I actually stifle either space for other people's opinions or reality. That's where actually people feel really alienated. So I'll give you an example. When I was a principal at a primary school in South Africa, we're this small and mighty 12-person teaching team starting a brand new school in the heart of Johannesburg. And as with any startup, there are a lot of challenges. And I felt though, like if we're going to get through these challenges, we have to be really like, we can't be cynical. We have to be optimistic. And this is like, I'm not sure how much this relates to, but it kind of relates to belonging. But I felt like I had teachers and team members who were going, the sky is dark and gloomy. Our construction of our playgrounds aren't ready. There were real things that were wrong. And instead of creating space for those opinions and those assertions, honestly, of reality. I was like, oh, no. The sky is blue. Like, look at all these things we can celebrate that is going right. And like, ooh, rah, rah, rah. And I just felt like I had to be this pillar of possibility, but in a way that was honestly obnoxious and was like denying people their own reality. And it just went south because we had the same mission and vision. Yes, they cared about kids and learning. Yes, they cared about like starting this new school, just like I did. But they were saying, hey, along the way, we're noticing that there's some hard things and the sky kind of feels, this feels challenging. And I just created no space for those challenges. I like bulldozed right ahead and was like, the sky is blue and it is sunny. And that's just so alienating. And that like then disintegrates trust, which I think is another important part of belonging is trusting the people to whom you belong. And so creating a spaciousness for dissent, for challenge, for opinions that are different than yours is so important. And I really learned that the hard way when I was like, I can create no space for that. I had someone just a teacher come and say, you know what, actually, let me hold a mirror, and this actually just makes me feel like I'm crazy, and also that you're crazy, and that like we're not like living in the same reality.
What are the things we shouldn't allow? Let me give you a really practical example. It's like I remember being in an organization where whenever there was a problem, the individual in the team would love writing an email complaining about the problem. And would spend, you could see almost would spend hours the night before deciding who they would copy that email to. Does that make sense? And I always have always said, you know, if you've got something nasty to say to people, pick up the phone and say it. Don't write nasty emails. And certainly don't spend hours figuring out who you're going to copy it to. So, to me, there are some things where you have to sort of say, absolutely, everybody must do what works for them. But let me be clear, any team that I'm leading, nasty emails, no. Phone calls, yes. Phone call, tell me I'm a useless old cow, that I've really messed something up, but phone me up, don't write me an email and tell me I'm a useless cow. So,
Yeah, so
sort of,
that's
some
co-created
things that are
culture.
basic. Yeah.
Yeah, like just making things explicit.
I remember years ago having somebody, I watched them do it and I thought, I'm stealing that idea. That's a really cool one. I remember she sat down and she said, listen, I've listened to everybody in the team, and there are five different ways of doing this. And they are all very, very good. But this isn't a free for all. We're not going to do five things. We've got to choose one thing. And as the leader, we're going for this one. That doesn't mean that the other four are rubbish. It just means that we've got to choose one of the four, and this is it, having listened to everybody. I mean, I would argue that done right, that also builds a sense of belonging.
Part of belonging, again, there's this humility, there's this surrender to something bigger than oneself. And that means like compromise and letting go of your own private peculiarities.
But those peculiarities are important sometimes, aren't they? In very different ways, because part of building a sense of belonging is creating fun. And the fun of
That's so
change, the fun
interesting.
of energy, the fun of action. I think the fun of being together, laughing together, teasing each other, but also the fun of, yeah, let's change this. Let's do this different. Let's,
Oh, I hear that.
and the fun of making things happen, and the fun of laughing together. To me, I don't think I could ever be a member of a team where nobody laughed or smiled or I remember being in a building once and our offices were right up at the top and we were cuckoos right at the top and the rest of the building was an organization. And I remember once being pulled aside by the man who ran the whole organization. And he said, Julia, could you stop your colleagues from laughing and smiling in the lift? And he said, because, we're all doing serious work here. And whenever you get in the lift, what's the American word for a lift?
Elevator.
Elevator, that's it. When you get in the elevator, you lot are always laughing and smiling and joking. And it feels quite uncomfortable. It makes me think that what you're doing is not serious. And I just looked at him and I thought, I just don't know that I could ever achieve that because we all have real fun at work.
Wow, gosh, that's so interesting. Yeah, I think you've opened a part of me that actually knows that as also social and human beings, I do think we're actually wired as social beings for connection, and that the effervescence that comes from fun and laughter is so connecting on like a biological, evolutionary level. And yeah, we sometimes, just like we build systems to foster that, we have definitely built systems. And if you look at the world, many men have built systems that corrode that. And there are other ways to build efficiency and work culture, and they don't have to include those things. But thank goodness that there are ways that actually we can leverage fun and effervescence to do this work as well in effective ways.
I love that sense. So we've gone from belonging to effervescence. This has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you very, very much for that, Rebecca. It was fun dredging up thoughts and ideas and examples. You're right, aren't you, about that word belonging? It makes us brave enough to be visible when we have a sense of belonging. And that's so important if we're going to be leading. And as you say, it gives you a sense of trusting the people with whom you feel you belong. Certainly, it brought back a lot of stories to me. In my first job, yes, I must have been about sort of 22. I went to an organization, and this is a very British story, so please forgive me. But I went to an organization where every Christmas there was a pantomime with all the young and junior staff, and we did a pantomime for the benefit of the sort of all our bosses and our bosses' bosses and our bosses' bosses' bosses. And we did this great pantomime, which I ended up writing very often. I've never, ever, ever in a million years have acted in it, but I often ended up writing it. And indeed, that's how I met my husband, my future husband. We ended up writing the pantomime together. But I remember the chief executive of the organization once saying to me, I love the pantomime every year. It's crucial to how I lead. And I looked at him and I said, what's it got to do with how you lead? And he said, well, it's really at the pantomime every year that I really discover what people think about me. And it's true, actually. We sent some pretty strong messages to management in the pantomime that we'd so carefully written. If I look at photographs I took during that period of working, they're all of the pantomime. If I were to remember the colleagues that I worked with during that period, it's photographs of the pantomime. the pantomime became so much part of the ritual, the culture, the belonging. Yeah, it was very important and quite interesting looking back, now understanding that the chief executive found it to be an important ritual in terms of all of us belonging, but also actually a ritual in terms of him finding out what people really thought about him. It was also, of course, an opportunity for us to make those points. And rituals also around space too, isn't it? How important it is to create spaces in offices, different spaces that aren't just the space by your desk or the space by the microwave where you heat up your soup, or spaces, but actually spaces to sit or to think or to dream or to argue or to whatever it is, the need to design the space in your office so that they encourage rituals to happen. But then also you go on from rituals, don't you, Rebecca, and you talk about systems. And I think that is so often overlooked. I had a friend the other day who was talking about having spent an entire day, literally an entire day, with her top team, going through the procedures and systems within their organisation that were written up. And yeah, I don't think I ever did that, but I'm absolutely sure that I should have, because in the systems you embed the culture, or you embed the opposite, don't you? If your systems do not reflect your culture or reflect your rituals or promote a sense of belonging, then they have very little value, don't they, as systems? They won't make sense to people. And actually taking the time out to really, really look at the systems, how they're expressed, what are the words around them, must be so crucial to developing that sense of belonging. This has been a very, very interesting episode for me. I think it'll be even more interesting, to be honest, if you put it alongside next week's episode, which is with Veal. And she's going to talk about how do you lead people so that they are disruptors and helpful, useful, powerful, extraordinary disruptors within a team. But how do you spot the moment that they might flick from being disruptors to destructive forces within a team? How do you spot that moment and how do you deal with them? So belonging, dealing with individuals who don't particularly want to belong. These will be two really interesting episodes. In the meantime, thank you very much for joining the episode, and I send you lots and lots of love, Julia. There's also loads more you can learn from other women if you go to our website, womenemerging.org. That's womenemerging.org. Over time, we are determined to redefine leading so that more of us can say, if that's leading, I'm in.